Chapter 4, The Clouds. I have a lot of things to prove to myself. One is that I can live my life fearlessly. I have been speaking in front of people since I was 3.5 years old, reciting what we called, at the time, Easter pieces for the church. I still remember one of my first passages, Jesus rose on Easter day, hallelujah, hallelujah, all the angels did proclaim. The lady sitting in the front row, we called them sisters of the church, would say to my grandmother, Hattie Mae, this girl sure is a talking child. Eventually, I was invited to speak all of James Weldon Johnson's poetry from his book God's Trombones, 7 Negro Sermons in Verse, in congregations all over Nashville. From then on, no matter the size of the stage or who was watching, I had no fear of public speaking. In fact, it was in many ways where I felt most myself, another instance of the oak within the acorn. That is, until I got the call from Harvard. By this time, I'd been speaking for over 30 years, around the world, in stadiums filled with tens of thousands of people, and during television events watched by millions of people. But being asked to give the commencement speech for this 382-year-old Ivy League institution was yet another milestone. I mean, there aren't too many girls from rural Mississippi who can say they got to go to Harvard to talk. What an honor. And what pressure. I felt a lot of pressure. The kind of internal angst that makes you sit down at the computer to write, take one look at the empty screen, close the computer and say, I'll get to this in a little bit. Then worry about it some more, set a deadline to work on it again, and when the alarm goes off, find an excuse not to do it. You know how that goes. Usually, in times of uncertainty, my mantra is, when you don't know what to do, do nothing, and the answer will come. But I was not uncertain. Every part of me wanted to give this speech. I've also followed the guiding principle, doubt means don't. But again, this wasn't doubt. This was fear. Fear that I had nothing revelatory to teach these brilliant Harvard minds, that I had nothing to tell them that they hadn't heard before. And this fear manifested as procrastination, which resulted in guilt. Months later, during a conversation with the author, Stephen Pressfield, I was finally able to make sense of those feelings. Stephen said, the more important an activity is to your soul's evolution, the more resistance you will feel to it. He explained that no matter the dream, the shadow of resistance is inevitable. It's like the yin and yang. You can't have the dream without the shadow. So the more importance I placed on the Harvard speech, the stronger the resistance. This was a big aha for me. And it was incredibly comforting. It meant that there was no point in blaming myself for my anxiety because what I was experiencing was actually a spiritual law. The worries running around in my head were nothing more than the natural force of negativity at work, the shadow that lives in all of us, trying to convince us of our unworthiness. You're not good enough. What do you think you gotta say to the kids at Harvard? Understanding this changed everything. It was as though a cloud had lifted. Stephen's theory was a totally new way of looking at fear. For every dream, there is automatically going to be resistance, but your sheer will and desire can be stronger than the shadow. You get to decide. You get to declare, I want this, and confront the fear head on. As you'll hear in the upcoming quotes and conversations, doubt, fear, and worry stem not only from the voices inside you. Resistance can also come from those who love you most. They might give you myriad reasons not to pursue your dream. But remember, although often well-intentioned, even your closest allies are usually operating with their own agenda, whether they're aware of it or not. As for my speech, I found my groove after I realized you don't need to have gone to Harvard to speak to Harvard graduates. I love my time in Cambridge, and I'm proud that I faced down those shadow beliefs. Fear is real. We've all experienced it. And it can be a powerful roadblock. The true meaning of courage is to be afraid and then, with your knees knocking and your heart racing, take the leap anyway. Ready. set, go. Listen to Yanla Van Zandt's take on the importance of moving past your fears.
I'm fighting that part of me that says, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Don't do that. And there's a part of me that says, come on, we're going to do this. And then the other part says, don't you remember what happened last time? Oh, you're going to do that? You can't do it. It's in me. And there's a part of
me.
So
that's where the real battle is.
That's where the real battle is. That is where the crux and the core of trust comes in. Those two parts of us. The part of us that would rather stay broke and miserable, complaining, you know, living in the whatever, the mediocrity.
And why? Why? Because we're afraid?
Because we get to control it. I know how to be broke and poor and struggle and suffer and be angry. I know how to do that. You know, I got a degree. But when it comes to being open and vulnerable, because trust, the core ingredient of trust is vulnerability.
Yeah. Trust yourself. And I love what you say in here is that, you know, there isn't a person you can ask in the world at some point where they didn't say, I just find it difficult to trust people.
Right.
But what you say, that's not really the issue.
No.
Learning to trust other people.
No.
The real issue is
trusting yourself. Trusting yourself that you're going to make the right choices. Trusting yourself that you can hear that voice and follow it. Trusting yourself.
That when people betray you, abandon you, don't acknowledge you, whatever, you will.
I'll be okay.
Yeah. You know, I love, too, when you say that when you live with trust and faith, truly live it, what everyone else says and does becomes irrelevant.
It really does. You don't even hear it. But then again, that means that you've got to be willing sometimes to stand alone.
Yep.
You've got to be willing to piss some people off. You've got to be willing to look different, sound different, be different. And those are risks that many of us are not willing to do because we don't understand God. You trust yourself by knowing who you are. You trust God by understanding God's nature.
Joel Osteen shares a deeply personal story.
Oprah, when my dad died, he'd pastored our church for 40 years. I'd grown up there. And so all of a sudden, I'm the new pastor. I felt like I was supposed to do it. I didn't know it'd be successful. Every thought told me, Joel, you hadn't been to seminary. You're going to get up there and look like a fool. What makes you think you can pastor the church after you've been behind the scenes for 17 years? But I got up there to minister and I thought, I got to be like my dad. All these 6,000 people, they've come every week, you know, a lot of them for years and years. And if I don't teach like my dad and preach like my dad and use the same, I just felt like that it's not going
to
be right.
So the first sermon you did, you were trying to imitate your dad.
Yeah. I felt pressured to be him, not in a bad sense, because I love my dad. But I felt like I needed to be because that's what everybody expected of me. But then one day, about 3 or 4 months in, I realized I'm not good at being my dad. I'm not good at preaching his messages. He came from a Southern Baptist background. He's more fiery. And I thought, I'm laid back. I'm good at encouraging people, talking about life. And it's about 3 or 4 or 5 months in, I read a scripture. It said, David fulfilled his purpose for his generation.
Whoa,
and I felt like I heard something here that said, Joel, your dad fulfilled his purpose. Go be you. I think you can talk yourself into your dreams or you can talk yourself out of your dreams. I think that running your own race is probably another one of the biggest things that keeps people from their destiny.
I believe Mitch Albom found success because his intentions were pure.
Tuesdays with Maury was not supposed to be some kind of big book. It was a tiny little book that got turned down by most publishers I went to.
Because you wrote the book really just to help out Maury.
Just to pay his medical bills.
Just to pay his medical bills.
Yeah, that was it. In fact, if I hadn't had that as a purpose, honestly, Oprah, I would have given up trying because we had so many people tell us it's a bad idea, it's depressing, you can't write anything like that, you're a sports writer. I had one publisher tell me in the middle of while I was telling him what I thought was so significant about Maury, he said, let me stop you. We're not going to take this book. And honestly, I don't think you even know what a memoir is. Why don't you come back in 20 years and maybe you'll be old enough to write a good memoir? I remember leaving there and I thought, why can't they just say no? I mean, it's like, they have to like knock it down. I've actually heard from them down the pike and they were interested in something else that I was doing when I had some more success.
And you were kind enough not to remind them?
I did not remind them.
Oh, wow.
But I also didn't go with them.
And now, Tim's story.
We only have 24 hours in a day. So you have a choice to walk with wise people and stack up more wisdom, or You can become a companion of fools and your life will unravel. If I life coached you one-on-one, I would guarantee that some of your lost momentum has come with the people that you placed around your life. Because people can suck the life out of you. If you walk with the wise, you grow wise yourself.
Dr. Shefali Sabari.
I have adults in therapy in their 40s and 50s, terrified when they're facing bankruptcy or a divorce or life throws a curve at them because they believe they will be nothing. And they're so afraid to confront that emptiness. But little realizing that just beneath emptiness is the vast expanse of their spirit.
Crisis of confidence ultimately elevated India Arie to the life she envisioned for herself.
The first year I went to the Grammys, I was nominated for 7, and it was really out of the blue because I hadn't sold that. I had sold maybe 800,000 albums, mm-hmm. and I got nominated for 7 Grammys.
Whoa.
And so the show came, and I lost all of them. And it was this big conversation forever, all over the radio for years. Yeah. But, you know, for the first 2 months, it was all over the radio, and why, and how could she, you know,
be nominated for 7 Grammys right? and not win
and
one?
It ended up being called a shutout.
Yeah.
And so a couple times in a couple of rap songs, I've heard people refer to it as the India Arie. Yeah. What if you get India Arie'd at the Grammys? Like, uh-huh. It's this thing. And I realized 2 things about that now. And one is that really was God's way of giving me a breakthrough because I was on everybody's lips all of a sudden because I lost. Everybody was still talking about me, and they had so much love for me and compassion about me. And then my album sales shot up. But all I felt was maybe I'm not meant to have all of that. And, mm-hmm. You know, but
maybe I didn't deserve
it. Maybe I didn't deserve. At the time, I didn't feel like deserve. It just felt like maybe that's just not how I'm built. Maybe I wasn't built for that. When I first got those Grammy nominations, I had chest pains. I was having chest pains when I really should have been celebrating and enjoying. And I know this is going to sound simple, but I really feel this, that your self-worth is your job. It's your sacred space to cultivate. Because there's always going to be somebody who comes along and says, you're not thin enough, or your hair is not that enough, or your voice is not high enough, or you're not going to make it in the music industry because you don't sound like all the other. There's always going to be somebody who comes along and says something like that. But if you can remind yourself that they're wrong, mm-hmm. because you know you're on path, if you can just remind yourself. And one of the things I do now after all this healing work I've done is I sit in my journal or my meditation time and I say, what would I do about this thing? Whatever it is. Sometimes it's an opportunity that I think I'm not ready for. Sometimes it's somebody telling me that I can't or I'm not worthy, you know, mm-hmm. of something. And I sit in my private space and I say, I really just play it all out. I can visualize it or write it. And I say, what would I do if I knew I was 100% worthy of this? What would I do?
What would I do if I were 100% worthy?
If I knew. What would I do? Just what if?
There are so many ahas when I talk with Michael Bernard Beckwith. I get goosebumps.
So this is a shift that takes place where you're actually talking about the possibilities mm-hmm. more than you're talking about your issues.
Yeah.
You don't deny the issues. Bad things have happened to people. You're not denying that those things have happened.
But it's the energy that you give to it. That is a definite, true fact. If you start talking about somebody or you're engaged in a conversation where you're gossiping, before long, you're spiraling down.
Energy goes into those lower frequencies.
Yep.
Doubt, worry, fear. Now you're in that sediment. Mm-hmm. You're in that dynamic. Mm-hmm. But if you start talking about possibility, even if you don't know how to get there, then your energy starts to go up. Mm-hmm. What if you ask a what if question? What if all my needs were met? What would I be doing in my life? What if everything is really working together for my good? What if all the bad things that have happened in my life are leading me to activating some great potential in my experience? Mm-hmm. What if God really is on my side?
Yeah.
You ask a what if question and you start to notice little tiny miracles happening in your life. Mm-hmm.
Debbie Ford shares her insight.
The shadow is always fear-based, right? I don't want to be that.
Mm-hmm. What we judge, I don't want to be that. I'll never be like my mother. You know, mm-hmm. people are always saying that, or mm-hmm. my father, or it's always a push away. That's how we know it's a judgment. Mm-hmm. It's when somebody says something to us and we have that jarring effect and it makes us angry. We know it's our shadow because otherwise we wouldn't care.
But isn't the ultimate shadow belief that I'm not good enough?
Well, I think that there's a couple of cores. Mm-hmm. I'm not good enough. I'm unlovable, mm-hmm. right? Another form of I'm not good enough is I'm unworthy. Mm-hmm. And I think women more than anybody mm-hmm. have that innately inside of them. So those are three very powerful shadow beliefs that birth all the other ones that come along. Mm-hmm. And if we understand it, we understand that it's not about hating these, which most people are fighting, right? They're resisting. I was just resisting this shadow called cancer, mm-hmm. you know, but it's about embracing. Like, why would I have this? And how could I use this? And I know you and I talked about it, I think 11 years ago, about how do you feel worthy enough? Mm-hmm. And how do we feel strong enough, no matter who we are? And I think because we're born with so many gifts that have been so suppressed mm-hmm. that we can't allow that real self. And if you can't allow the dark to exist, then you can't allow the light.
My profound conversation with Michael Singer remains a viewer favorite.
Now, why are we so afraid of change?
What basically happens is we've gone to the mind and said, I'm not okay. How does everything need to be for me to be okay? And then we are devoted ourselves to try and create that situation. It doesn't work, but we don't know that yet. And so we try to create situations that we think will make us be okay. And when things start changing that don't match that model.
Yeah, we get scared.
We get scared because it looks like it's not going to work.
Okay, I love what you say too. People don't realize that fear is a thing.
Yes.
Fear is a thing.
It's a thing.
It's just another object in the universe that you're capable of experiencing, and you can do one of two things with fear. You can
either push it away or you can let it go.
Yeah.
Right? You can either avoid it and be scared of it mm-hmm. or you can let it pass right through. Fear comes up out of your heart. That's a very natural thing. It's human. All right? You are watching it. You see it. You have the right to relax, let it pass right through you. If you don't do that, you're going to try and fix it. You're going to try and control situations outside so you don't ever feel the fear. And it all starts to bother you. That's what it means. You'll fall. And eventually you'll lose your consciousness. You'll forget your whole purpose. And you'll just be scared. You just get scared.
You say the alternative is to decide not to fight with life. But that feels like just giving up and letting things take over.
Right. You don't do that in any way, shape, or form, right? Life is a natural unfolding of reality. You're supposed to harmonize and work with it. You don't give up and let it take over, right? It's like if you get on a horse and you're scared,
yeah.
you're not going to be a very good rider. Right? But that mm-hmm. doesn't mean you let the horse go wherever they want. Mm-hmm. You learn how to interface and interact with life in a wholesome, participatory way. Fear doesn't let you do that. So letting go of fear is not letting go of life.
And now, Elizabeth Gilbert.
This was my victory in my battle. All my demons, all my monsters that I'd been carrying around forever, the light came through and I realized, they're not demons. They're not monsters. They're not dragons. I've been making them more grandiose than they are. They're just the orphaned parts of me. They're just the fearfulest, most young, terrified parts of me. They are scared to death, and they are throwing temper tantrums because of their fear. And now I have to tell them that it's going to be okay, and they will all go to sleep. I am the mother of all of these parts of me. And I remember just sort of in my mind ascending above them all and just saying, I love you, fear, and now you go to sleep. I love you, anger, you're part of me. Go to sleep, it's fine, I'm in charge now. I love you, shame, even you. Come into my heart, go to sleep, you're safe, I love you. I'm not leaving you, I can't, you're part of me, you're part of the family. You're never gonna be away from me. I love you, failure. Come into my heart, rest. You're so tired, you're so scared, you're just children, you don't know how the world works. I love all of you, I have space for all of you. And together, we're just gonna go forward now.